Hi guys, I have got a massive week this week, a heap of stuff to talk about, so I'm just going to jump straight into it, and I'm going to start with something that has just come across my radar in about the last hour, which is Under Armour. So this is Under Armour, you know, like the fitness brand. They have had apparently about 150 million MyFitnessPal accounts compromised. Now, 150 million is a big number, even in terms of sort of the big data breaches. Just off the top of my head, thinking back to it, that's sort of like LinkedIn scale. I think LinkedIn was about 160 million. So massive, massive breach. And this has sort of just been hitting the news in the last few hours. It looks like they announced after about 4 days. So 4 days after they discovered it. So good on them for that. That is positive. It looks like they had bcrypt for password hashes. That bit's good. The less good bit is apparently they've also got a bunch of SHA-1. And this is like just absolute echoes of Dropbox. Because Dropbox had about half their hashes were SHA-1 and half their hashes were bcrypt. And inevitably, what a lot of companies do is they've got sort of a legacy hashing algorithm approach, SHA-1 in this case, and time goes by, and then they go, SHA-1's not very good anymore. We should actually use bcrypt. And let's say, for argument's sake, 4 years ago, they decided we should use bcrypt. So what they do is they say, okay, now, when someone logs in and we authenticate them against their old SHA-1 hash, and we've got their password in the clear because they've just sent that in the HTTP request, we'll authenticate them, then we'll take that password, we'll bcrypt it, and we'll use that as the new hash, and we'll either overwrite the SHA-1 or put it in another column, do whatever. And what happens is over time, you go from 100% of people having SHA-1 down to increasingly small amounts. Now, here's the challenge, and I often ask this in my workshops when we do the module on password hashing and password cracking. How long is it going to take for every single person in your service to log on? The answer is infinity, because you will never get everyone logging back onto the service. So what ends up happening is you sort of have this curve, right, which never reaches zero. It might not ever reach a quarter or a third, depending on the nature of your service. And the problem with that is that you have this really long window, an infinite window in some cases, where you've still got a bunch of really weakly stored passwords. So this is a problem. And then sometimes people say, well, just reset all the passwords and send everyone an email and tell them to update their password to a new one. You know, basically do a password reset. Don't do that. That would be terrible. Because what's going to happen is you've got, in Under Armour's case, like 150 million people suddenly getting emails going, for your security, please change your password. The only way to reliably do this is you've got to take those existing hashes in the database, so SHA-1 hashes, go through and rehash every one of them with bcrypt. So now you've got a SHA-1 hash within a bcrypt hash, and yes, I know it feels a little bit dirty, but you abstract that away somewhere and you get to have one clean rollover. You don't have this extended window where you get owned. We've seen it with Dropbox, we've seen it with Under Armour, I'm sure we've seen it with other companies as well. Off the top of my head, I can't remember which ones, but certainly this is not an unusual practice, and this is the risk. Right, so we've got to wait and see what happens with Under Armour. I'm sure that's going to play out more in the press yet. Incidentally, for all the people going, when's it going to be and have I been pwned? Unless data's circulating and it's gone public, or someone picks it up and sends it to me, it's not going to be in Have I Been Pwned. And frankly, in total fairness, like the best outcome for everyone is that it is not circulated around publicly. We don't want that. That does bad things. By the time something gets into Have I Been Pwned, the situation is really not so good. Okay, moving on. Still early here. I'm still on the coffee. This week, in fact, just the day before yesterday, I recorded the second Pluralsight course in the quarterly series about creating a security-centric culture. So if you recall, back in January, I released one, and this was around how do we get people thinking positively about security who are in the business of actually building software. So how do we get developers endorsed in doing security day in and day out? And it's not like this exceptional thing they do. It's just, well, of course we do security. It's a natural ingrained part. The one I just recorded is about shadow IT. And for those of you who may not be familiar with the term, this is where you have other pockets within the organization doing IT themselves outside the formal constructs of the IT department. Now, I'll give you a really good example of this. In my decade and a half at Pfizer, at a massive large pharmaceutical company. And in fairness to Pfizer, this is the way most companies end up operating. I would have time after time where someone from like the marketing department would get in touch and they'd say, we need some help supporting our Access database. And I'd go, well, this is not a standard for how we build apps. Why do you have an Access database? Well, Jimbo in the marketing department needed to track some expenses. And Jimbo knows a bit of Access. So Jimbo created like this Access database. And then Mary wanted to use it as well. So Jimbo put it on network share and Mary started using it. And then like the whole department started using it. And what's happened here is you've got this one IT construct, which is a database, and Jimbo knows himself a bit of Access, so he's managed to actually fulfill a business requirement, but now they have outgrown it because Jimbo is not exactly an IT person and didn't realize that just chucking an Access database on a network share and giving access to everyone is going to make you cry sooner or later. So that was sort of shadow IT as it was back in the day. It's only 3 years since I left there, actually. You know what? It'll be 3 years, I think, in the next week or two. I should have a celebration. Anywho, so you know, this has always been a problem, shadow IT. And now, as we move forward into the cloud era, it actually gets a lot worse because now Jimbo is standing up an S3 bucket somewhere and putting his Access database there or whatever online construct he uses because it's fast and easy and cost-effective and, hey, look at how quickly I solved our business problem. This has massive security ramifications. So that's the course I've just recorded. I recorded it on the iPhone here with the microphone there and the screen. So it's a combination of sort of video, audio, and screencast. I expect we'll have all of that up in April. It will be free as well. It's in front of the paywall, so everyone can get access to it, which makes me very, very happy. Okay, now let's get on to... Oh, no, I'm just looking at my list. Let's do the uncomfortable one. There was... There was a new data breach this week of an adult nature related to the way some adults spend time with their pets. It was a bestiality site, still is. It's up there online in the clear web, and it had a data breach. And, I have seen many jokes about this since I published it, and I appreciate that some of those are really funny. But let's try and be a little bit mature about this. It was a data breach of a site of a very sensitive nature. If someone's data is found in there, it's not going to be a good time for them. And certainly there were a lot of legitimate addresses. 35% of those addresses were in Have I Been Pwned. Multiple people in the data breach were Have I Been Pwned subscribers, so they got very uncomfortable emails yesterday. And ultimately this site got hacked, about 3,200 people in there in total. A bunch of information was then posted to a very popular forum, which you probably have heard of, but I won't sort of give people pointers to here. A lot of discussion, links through to the data. I mean, it was sort of all over the place. Very, very strangely, so I worked with Joseph Cox from Motherboard, who wrote this up. Very strangely, apparently this practice is outlawed in 46 US states. And I kind of said to Joseph, like, what is going on with the other states? What is happening here? And apparently one of the other states is Hawaii, which I'm about to head off to in a couple of days. So that I'm not sure if that's content I really want to put in my keynote next week in Hawaii. Maybe you got to be a bit careful with some of this stuff. But be that as it is, it was a data breach, which is now in Have I Been Pwned. It is definitely flagged as sensitive as well. Okay, that is that. Now, moving on to blog posts of the week. And there's one which did make me chuckle, if I'm honest. And this is about a scammer trying to convince me that TroyHunt.com had security issues which I needed to pay him to either identify or fix. It was never really quite clear what the guy was going to do. And I'm also just looking at my picture as I get more light here and noticing that my brightness is not real good. So let's try that. Now, incidentally, while I talk about light and brightness, I haven't sorted out my lighting issues yet, obviously. I did get an email from someone overnight with some really, really awesome tips in it, so I need to read that properly. Thank you to the person who sent me that. I'll probably try and do this when I get back from this next trip and get my lighting sorted out. All right, so a scammer tried to scare me into buying their security services. Here's how it all went down. Now, this sort of started out as one of these typical spam emails where this guy says, "Hi there, do you know?" Question mark. And the title of this, by the way, is, and I'm going to read it in full because this makes you realize how automated this is. https://www.troyhunt.com/have vulnerabilities. Anyway, hi there, do you know your website can be hacked? It's like dramatic pause. Here are some vulnerabilities: CSRF, XSS, SQL injection, Open Redirect, and more. Interestingly, Open Redirect now dropped from the OWASP top 10 in the 2017 edition. Let me know if you need more information. And I am an ethical hacker, pen tester, and a computer scientist. I can help you make your site 100% secure also. Bold claim. Prevent, with a capital P after a comma, a bit odd, prevent future hackers from being able to access the site. See you online, warm regards. Now, I would normally delete something like this outright, but I think I must have been in a antagonistic mood or something like that. So I replied to him. And I'm not going to read all of these, but this will just give you a sense of how this discussion panned out from here. Replied to him and said, "This has me worried. I always run McAfee on my PC, so I'm very surprised to hear this. Troy." Now, I tweeted this as I went along as well. I was like tweeting each one just to sort of see how people reacted. And everyone's obviously having a bit of fun with it. Anyway, it goes on where we have multiple levels of exchange, after which the guy says, "I can fix your site for $200 to $250. And I was like, I just want to see where this goes. Because for context, TroyHunt.com runs on Ghost, and it runs on Ghost Pro, so their hosted model. And it sits behind Cloudflare. Now, the chances of it having XSS, SQL injection, all this sort of stuff are extremely low. I don't think it even sits on a relational database. It's all basically like static files, which is kind of interesting. The chances are extremely low. If it did have a problem, it's not my problem. It's Ghost's problem. I mean, okay, I don't want my platform that I'm running on to have XSS or something like this, but they would be accountable for fixing it. This report would have to go through to them. It'll take you all about 2 minutes to figure out the things running on Ghost, not least of which because down the bottom of the website, it says the things running on Ghost. And Ghost has a really easily locatable disclosure policy as well, with an email address to contact. Like, it just, Ghost did everything right. Clearly, this was just like a shotgun approach. Now, the way it all ended up panning out is eventually the penny drops for this guy. Like, I basically pushed him and pushed him, and had lots of references from Hacker's movies as well, which some of you will love. He never would have got it. I pushed him and said, effectively, POC or GTFO. So, show me how it works, or... And he didn't answer, and I pushed him again. And then finally, for the first time, he actually looked at the website and said, "I'm Troy Hunt," and so he's just copied and pasted it. "I'm Troy Hunt, an Australian Microsoft Regional Director and Microsoft Most Valuable Professional for Developer Security. Have a good day." And what he'd actually done is he had pulled a report, a domain report, from a site called Kutera.com, which is meant to list sites that potentially have malware on them. Now, begs the question, how does my site potentially have malware on it? Because one of my blog posts talked about why the reputation of a site is valuable to attackers of any site. So effectively, a site not having a negative reputation is valuable to attackers because they can use that for phishing sites, and they will get some number of possibly days before it's flagged by like Google Safe Browsing and your ISP, etc., as a phishing site. So I had a code snippet in there which obviously complied to a signature which this particular service then used to say you've got malware. So very basic, pointless service, quite frankly. Anyway, I emailed the guy and I said, "Look, I'm going to write about this. I am offering you the opportunity to explain yourself," to which he never replied, and now there is a blog post. But the thing that sort of got me with this is that it really frustrated me that you have someone reaching out. And just to put this in context, I'm saying scammer. This meets every possible definition of the word scam. This is someone who advertises on things like Upwork and Fiverr and these sorts of online places to provide services. It's a real person, real identity. But clearly what he was trying to do is just scare as many people as possible so he could make money. what I really got upset about, more than anything, more than him trying to get money out of me, is that I find it so difficult to try and report ethically to companies because there is so much noise out there, partly because there is so much noise out there. So here you've got this bloke popping up, sending reports for things that are non-existent and making people reticent to read these reports and take them seriously, such that when I come along or someone else like me comes along and says, you've got a SQL injection vulnerability, or I've got 20 million records of your data, they're not going to want to reply because they're conditioned to all of this crap coming into their inbox. So that really, really bugged me. Now, on that bug front, speaking of bugs, I link here to BugCrowd, and I mentioned that when I was in San Fran, I did a couple of Pluralsight courses, actually, with my mate Casey Ellis, who's the founder of BugCrowd. So bug bounties are awesome. If a company does not have a bug bounty or any sort of published offering of reward for things you find, you are in absolutely no position to go along and ask for money. Now, I think this is really important because I've seen this many times before where people have contacted me and said, I reported something to this company and they didn't give me anything. What's my recourse? Well, you don't have recourse. If they don't have a bug bounty, you going out there saying, give me money to report something, is called something else. And we generally call it extortion. You know, like, this is not a positive behavioral attribute. And frankly, it's right on the verge of being illegal in some places as well. It's very, very, very shady gray area. Look at the way Uber panned out. So someone went to them, said, we've got a problem. We'd like to, you know, we've found a problem. We have your data. And it was serious too, right? Like, they literally got the customer database. We would like money. And of course, we now know that that's turned into an absolute nightmare for Uber because it's a shitty thing to do. So you're in no position to do that. Now let me finish that little bit on a lighter note. I got a DM from someone, and this was actually, I'm just going to adjust my lighting again. This is a job. I got to fix this next time. This DM was kind of funny. Someone DMs me and says, I have found reflected XSS on one of your subdomain. I have sent message through Open Bug Bounty. Now, every time I get something like this, there is a little bit of me that is very concerned. Because, look, for any of us, we would be very worried if someone says you have a security vulnerability. Now, the guy before, like, I knew that was crap straight off the bat. You know, not a problem. This one was much more targeted. It was obviously sent specifically to me via DM. So there's always a bit of me that's very concerned about this. And I think where I'm trying to go with this is that you need to be really, really confident if you're going to tell someone they have bugs or vulnerabilities in their system that you're spot on. Now, as it turns out, this guy was spot on, but that's not what the funny thing is. Bear with me. So he says, you know, I found XSS on one of your subdomains. And I think he was talking about troyhunt.com. And I said, okay, which subdomain? I think I can guess. Smiley face. And he goes on, he says, hackyourselffirst.troyhunt.com. And now, many of you will know that hackyourselffirst.troyhunt.com is there to hack yourself first. It is there deliberately full of vulnerabilities so that you can experience XSS and SQL injection, all these other nasty things. And he then sends me a screen cap with a proof. He's got an alert that he's popped up from the search page. This is a vulnerable link. Opening Chrome or Firefox, XSS is triggered. XSS will triggered. English not a strong point. Now, all right, look, at least the guys, this is not a shakedown. Like, the previous thing was, he's actually trying to report this. So he sends that, and I'm going, I just read what I said. I said, tell me if I'm missing the joke here, but are you reporting a vulnerability in a website that literally tells you it's intentionally designed to be full of vulnerabilities for training purposes? And I sent a screen cap of the big model that pops up on the site the very first time you go there. And it says, this website is provided by troyhunt.com as part of the Pluralsight course, Hack Yourself First, How to Go on the Cyber Offense. It's full of nasty AppSec holes. No, seriously, it's terrible. And the guy saw that, and I was going to say read it, but at the very least he dismissed it, and then went and found XSS and reported it to me. So anyway, I shared that. That's been liked 1,600 times, so everyone got some pleasure out of it. That's good. Now, So that was that. Now, something else, and I'm sort of doing this a little bit chronologically today. Mind you, I did start with the last thing that happened, which was the Under Armour stuff. Anywho, regardless, I want to talk about date formats. And I never expected to have a large amount of arguing, as it may be, on Twitter about this original tweet. And I want to set some context here. As you know, I am Australian, and Australia is a very British-orientated country, obviously colonised by the Brits, still have the same queen. She's still on our money. As part of this as well, we represent our dates as the day, and then the month, and then the year. And in fact, just for simplicity's sake, there's only one country in the world. Actually, there's two countries in the world that use the month, and then the day, and then the year. One is the US, and the other is, I think it was Micronesia. So two places in the world. So around about 4% of the world's population. So I was going to say basically no one. I don't mean to cause offense to American people, because I know America's very important to you. But in the global scheme of things, it's a very, very small slice of the world. Be that as it may, I constantly have communication with people in the US. Most of the work I do, things like Pluralsight, for example, relate back to the work I'm doing with people in the US. And I constantly have confusion due to date formats. And what happened, I think it was this weekend or somewhere like that, I was chasing up an invoice for someone. And they said, look, we received your invoice on 3/2. And I'm looking at going, well, when was this? Was this like the 3rd of Feb or was it the 2nd of March? I think it's going to be the American version, and I have to think very carefully when I think about the date. So I think it was going to be the 2nd of March because you'd put the month before the day, but also you're communicating with an Australian, and maybe you know that the rest of the world doesn't use that format and you put it in my form. Tell you what, you know what would be awesome? I'm going to send a tweet and say what would be really helpful is that whenever we communicate dates in this fashion, we use letters for the month. Because then if you say March 2 or 2 March, it doesn't matter. Everybody understands it because they see the word March and there's no ambiguity whatsoever. Excuse me. Now, in my mind, I thought this was the most rational, sensible thing ever. And then all of these people started going, should use ISO formats, ISO 8601. If you use ISO 8601, it's the standard, everyone will understand it. And I'm going, wait, hang on a second. That's not necessarily the case, because what's happening here is you're using only numbers again, and everyone who understands the convention, everyone who knows the convention, will get it right, and they know that the month will be the middle part. But you're assuming that everyone knows the convention, and plus, this is in an email. It's like it's written. It doesn't need to be sortable. A bunch of people said, you should use ISO 8601 because it's sortable. Well, that's great if you're like naming files and you need to be able to sort by the file name, ignoring the fact that you might be able to sort by a date or something like that anyway, regardless. But you're kind of totally missing the point that this is in a communication between two people. And then a bunch of people said, well, if you use three letters, what language should it be in? You know, like you're basically excluding a bunch of the non-English speaking world. And so, well, it's going to be in whatever language the email I'm writing is in, or the email that the Americans emailing me are writing in, which is English. And if they write FEB, we are all going to know that it's February. So I think the thing that sort of really got me here, actually, someone said, oh, you should use Linux timestamps. Yeah, they've really messed with people. Let me see what. Yeah, no, they're the big issues. So I think the thing that really got me here is that people were sort of missing the fact that the contexts are very, very different. If you go and have a look at any of the APIs on Have I Been Pwned, you will see a full ISO standard format, and it will begin with year, month, day. If you go and have a look, if you ever get an invoice from me, or if I ever email you and we talk about what date I'm going to come and visit you, you will see the month represented in letters. Like these are totally different contexts. And it was kind of funny. I had a few people that really got this. And they said, why is everyone arguing that you should be standardizing on ISO formats for a human conversation? You know, like this is nuts. You're totally missing the point. And I put out a poll, actually. And the poll effectively said, if you see, it was an ISO format, And you know what? I'm going to look at the poll because I've got a link to it here. And I want to give you the actual numbers from this. So I put out a poll and I said, a question for your non-tech friends, because I have a theory that there's a bunch of non-tech people that don't understand ISO formats. Do try and answer honestly. What date is 2018-03-02? Is it A, the 3rd of Feb, B, the 2nd of March, C, WTF is that date format? Now, 79% of people had the right answer. And I had people actually point to this poll and say, ha-ha, there you go. See, most people do understand ISO format. You should use ISO format. And I'm going, well, hang on a second. Do I really want to send messages in a way that 21% of people don't understand the date? Is one in five okay that they get the date they need to pay me wrong, or the date I'm going to come and visit them wrong, or the date they need to book my hotel wrong? I don't want a one in five hit rate. That is going to be catastrophically bad for me. You know what has a zero in five hit rate? Writing freaking FEB. That's what has a zero in five hit rate. Now, as someone commented in the Twitters afterwards, it looks like you're quite passionate about this. And I am, because I continually have to deal with these misinterpretations of dates. It actually makes life really, really hard when you're working across cultures and people are making assumptions. And an ISO format is still an assumption that someone understands which bit goes before the other. And there are multiple people on Twitter that came back and said, I asked someone this and they thought it was year, day, month, because Americans mix it around compared to the rest of the world. That's not ambiguity and confusion I'm willing to take. Use month names, end of story. Unless it's in an API, then you can use ISO. All right, move on. Now, where were we next? So we did, boy, oh boy, what a week. Aussie telcos. I have a feeling that telcos in general are the entities that people love to hate. I don't think it's just Australia. I mean, certainly when I see, say that I talk to a lot of people in the UK, a lot of your local UK telcos, people are very, very happy to berate and say that they're not doing a particularly good job. Now, something happened. Two things happened with our local Aussie telcos that were just part of a long chain of bigger problems that we have in this industry. I want to talk about them here. One is that I actually tweeted this on the 1st of March. I went into our local telco to change some phone plans. And what I was doing with these phone plans is effectively getting us off the old crappy low bandwidth option and getting us to a point where we actually have more bandwidth. I've complained about bandwidth before. Actually, let me clarify, because people correct me. Not bandwidth, data caps. How much data can I transfer a month before I get pinged with big fees? I went in there, spoke to the guy, very nice guy, in at the Telstra shop. And he says, okay, come and sit down at the terminal here. So we're in the public area. So imagine it's almost like a room like this. And behind us, there's the counters with all the phones and things. And there's people walking all the way around. And we're sitting here looking at the screen. Big screen, like 30 plus inch kind of screen. On that screen is my wife's account details. It has a bunch of stuff, including the account number, the ACN of the legal entity which these devices are under. ACN is an Australian company number. It's like a business number. Not particularly sensitive, but you don't really want to display it to everyone. And amongst other things, the inquiry password, which is the verbal password that she uses to authenticate herself, not just to Telstra, but to other services as well, because she set this up two decades ago. Before she met me and before she was conscious about security and all this sort of stuff. And it was the same password as used on her bank and other services. Now, I took a photo of this because the guy actually left the room for a while and he was gone for like minutes doing something out the back. So while he was gone, I just went, you know, took a photo, got back, showed Kylie, and she, I can't say here exactly what she said, but it wasn't good. Because she's looking at this going, well, but this is my, like, my password for my bank. And are you saying that they had it on a big screen facing everyone walking past? This is crazy. Yes, they do. Yes, it's by design. Yes, it's a major freaking issue. So I pinged them at the time on Twitter as part of this and said, you know, like, this is crazy. And they said, oh, yeah, we take security seriously. Don't get me started on that. Had a bit of a DM. We'll get someone to contact you. Nothing. Fast forward to this week, And we've got Jeff Huntley. Now, Jeff Huntley dropped into an Optus store. And Optus is another major carrier here in Australia. They're actually owned by Singtel, a Singaporean company. And he's dropped into the Optus store, and he's sitting at a terminal, publicly facing as well. And there's a web browser. It's Chrome. Chrome's running there. It's open on a page with an internal address, but accepting credit card data, not served over HTTPS. The Chrome's doing its not secure thing in the address bar. And he said, dropped into Optus to do some billing inquiries on a mobile phone service. I'm like, yo, my credit card details and financial information you're entering into this internet system isn't even fully encrypted. Now, this is a reasonable thing for Jeff to say, because first of all, he's totally right. Like, the browser is literally saying not secure. Yes, it's an internal network. Yes, bad stuff happens on internal networks as well. We need HTTPS in all the places. That's why Google even warns you when it is an internal network. So Google Chrome, of course, warns you when it's an internal network. So this was perfectly reasonable. But Optus's response was, don't take photos. You're not allowed to take photos. You don't have permission. And they were asking him to delete it. I can't believe this. Jeff, this is an internal system not available to the public, except that the public can walk in and like literally see it on the big screens. We're making this request. This is a request to delete the tweets because this photo was taken without consent and is Optus's intellectual property. You are unable to photograph inside an Optus establishment without permission. Now, of course, the irony of it is that a telco with heaps of mobile phones on display is kind of like the greatest possible density of cameras you're ever going to find, right? I mean, it's insane. It's like, here, they're all here, but don't use them. So this was totally missing the point. So they didn't say here's what I would have suggested they say. I would have said, thank you for your inquiry. We will investigate this further. Let us get back to you. That's a good response. Yes, it could be dismissive, because that's exactly what Telstra did, but it de-escalates, it takes offline, it acknowledges that they've heard him. That should have been the response. But instead, they've done this. Now, of course, this is classic Streisand effect, right? Like, as soon as you start making a big issue about something that you don't want a big issue made of, it's going to be a big issue. And to make it even worse, they blocked him. So he couldn't have the two-way discussion with them anymore about maybe this isn't a good thing to do with your stores. Now, at some point, I got CC'd into this discussion. And when I saw that and thought back to my situation with my wife's password up on the screen as well, I thought that was kind of blog-worthy. So I write this bit up because the thing is, it's not just the security impact of showing someone's personal information inside the store. It was also stuff like Jeff observed that the operator was having to authenticate to the system while sitting right in front of Jeff, like right next to him. And apparently it took the operator several goes, and Jeff was able to easily observe the operator's password as he entered it into the system. All of that we know to be bad, but particularly when it's a telco, managing things like mobile phone accounts to which you receive SMSs, for which you're often used as identity verification attributes, and we know there's a bunch of SIM hijacking and other related phone things that go wrong, this just sets really, really bad precedents and is a really serious issue. Telstra actually said to me, I think in one of their tweets, the password that they put up on the screen, you need other bits of information to authenticate to your Telstra account. Now, quite possibly the other bits of information which are also on the screen. But I said to them, but that may be true, but you're aware, of course, that people do reuse their passwords all over the place. So what you've just done is provided a potential vector into people's other accounts as well by virtue of putting it all up on the screen, along with their name and address and all sorts of other stuff as well. So I think they're missing the point there. But I think the fundamental thing that I come back to here is that think about the practices that we all know to be good security practices, and all of us within corporate environments have drilled into us because you have to do the corporate security training. Don't let anyone else see your password. Don't leave anything on the screen that is of a sensitive nature where other people can see them. You get taught this, if you travel on an aeroplane, at the very least have the privacy screens, maybe not put anything on there. And also don't leave your machine unlocked around strangers as you walk away. This is like security 101. And how telcos can fail at this is just, it's just unfathomably stupid. So Telstra got back in touch with me via DM and said, you know, we'd like to speak to you. I said, okay, here's my number. They then came back and said, someone will call you next week. I'm going to be away next week. So I said, look, please email me. Here's my address. Send me an email. I don't want to let this drop. I want to follow it through. There is no explaining your way out of this either. Like, the only explanation is it's crap and we need to fix it. Anything short of that is insufficient. Okay, now, let's move on to the last major thing. And this is a really, really major thing. And it's, have I been pwned partnering with 1Password? So I want to try and, I guess, add to what's in the blog post as opposed to just repeat it. So I'm not even going to read through it. But basically, for Have I Been Pwned, since it's been running, I've always been really, really careful about the way it's been positioned. I want people to see it as a freely accessible service that allows them to do good things in the wake of bad things. Data breaches happened, not good, Under Armour. Now, how do we help people protect themselves? How do we help them learn where they've been exposed? How do we help them ultimately protect themselves better? So that's always been the goal. Nothing changes there. And the question then is what are the ways which I am doing that? Like, what are the best possible ways to do that? And to date, what I've been doing is after you do a search, it comes back and it says something like, assess the risk to you and take appropriate action, such as changing your password. Now, the thing is, and I've sort of felt this way for quite some time, that really has not been sufficient, because I don't want to have this situation where people go, let's say it's the Under Armour thing, let's say the data does turn up and have I been pwned. They search, they go, oh, my password in Under Armour was compromised. I'm going to go and change all my passwords to the same other crappy version of a new password, because that's not driving positive behavior. Now, you and I know that we should be using password managers. You are using a password manager, right? But your average everyday people who come to the site don't know that. Now, and just for context, over the last month, there's been about 100,000 people a day to the site. It's a little bit more than that, but, you know, on average. The vast majority of them have never heard of a password manager before. They do not understand the necessity to create genuinely strong and random passwords. And without really explicit guidance to that effect, they're just not going to do it. So I felt that way for quite some time. It was just one of those things that I'll get around to when I have time. So there was that. The other thing is that I've always run Have I Been Pwned without any sort of sponsorship, ads, incentivization that is sort of visibly there on the screen or anything like that. I have spoken multiple times before about having a commercial channel that a handful of organizations use. Totally tangential to this discussion, Google Have I Been Pwned commercial and you'll find it if you're interested. So there's been that, but there's been nothing sort of facing the public. And that has largely been because I didn't want any sort of dilution, for want of a better term, of the public sentiment of it being a service out there to do good, freely available, goodwill gesture, so on and so forth. So what's really changed here, and this goes back to the post of last week, is that Have I Been Pwned has gotten to a point now where, first of all, it's become very big. It is something that's consuming a lot of time. But also where the public sentiment and goodwill is at an all-time high. So it's at the point now where it's just getting enormously positive feedback over and over and over again. I think the congressional testimony helped a lot. That got it a lot of profile. The government's using it and me giving it to free for the governments to monitor their own domains. That was also very good. It has a huge amount of press every day in a very, very positive nature. And no one really is questioning the objectives or the motives. And nearly four and a half years on of running it the way I have, I don't think anyone is sort of going out there going, oh, this is like the long play, you know, just to cash in on the thing. Truth is, Have I Been Pwned has been enormously useful for all of the other things that I do. The Pluralsight courses I write, the training I do, the conference talks I do. That has given me so much material to go and do those things. It's been really, really valuable. And it reciprocates too. You know, when I do training and I go into organizations and I see their security postures, that really helps me with, say, the blogging, for example. And seeing those internal behaviors often helps me in terms of the way I process data, gives me some really good contacts in companies should I ever need them as well. I hope I don't have to reach out to companies I've done training for and say you've been pwned. That would be uncomfortable. Anywho, point is that it got to the stage where I was starting to feel much more comfortable with the idea of having another brand on Have I Been Pwned. And in all honesty, I did not give this any thought, any serious thought, until about a month ago. It just simply wasn't on the radar. And probably very late March, I'd say, I started to think about it more for a few reasons. Because number one, I want to be able to address that question. You know, how do we now lead people by the hand into a positive behavioral profile, for want of a better term? So how do we actually get them to a password manager? The best way to do that would be to literally, on that search page, have a password manager. So you've searched, you've found yourself pwned, you're in the probably 99% of people who've never heard of a password manager before. Here it is. And here's a link through to the site that explains how to use it and why it's good. And not just that, because password managers are not the be-all and end-all. Also, go and get yourself two-factor authentication. Also, subscribe to notifications on Have I Been Pwned. You're going to hear these three things come up a bit. So I felt that it would be good to try and lead people specifically down that path. Now, I could have said, go and get a password manager. And I'm sure people would do everything from start to put passwords in Excel on their desktop through to getting those physical password books. And incidentally, I don't think they're a bad idea. They are better than what most people are doing, which is using the same crap password everywhere. But it's not optimal. Optimal is having a good cryptographically strong password manager that's a reputable version that I would be happy recommending to people. Now, when we got to that point, I sort of went, okay, well, what would I do? What would be my approach? And to be clear, I spoke to multiple organizations who create password managers to see if they would be interested in having a presence on Have I Been Pwned. And I want to make that clear. This wasn't like I just went straight to 1Password. I wanted to have the discussion with multiple parties. And when I started going through that discussion and thinking what would be a good fit with Have I Been Pwned, and let me clarify what I mean by that as well. So a good fit would be, first of all, what's a product that I personally am endorsed in and I trust? What would I be happy recommending to other people? What do I think is a really good sort of consumer-orientated solution as well? And also, in complete transparency, what would be best received by you guys? And by you guys, I mean that the public, Twitter followers, this sort of thing. Because if I put another brand on there, no matter how good a job I do of it, or no matter how much sense I think it makes, there's always going to be a slice of people that are going to be upset. So how do I minimize that slice to the smallest possible amount? And really, 1Password was the only one that made sense, and it made sense for many, many different reasons. Number one, I have been using them myself since 2011. Now, this was very early days for me. I know it's only 7 years ago, but that was an absolute lifetime ago. That was very early in my security-centric career. I've been doing dev stuff for a long time, but yeah, the security-centric side, it was early. I went and got 1Password after looking at multiple other password managers because it was the best one that I felt met my needs. And meeting my needs was everything from sort of usability through to the way it synced across multiple devices. I went and got them. I have been using them. I don't think there would have been a day since in that 7 year period. Maybe a day. Only because I was on an airplane and didn't have access to stuff. Basically, it's something that I use really, really extensively. One of the most extensively used apps I have. So I've been living in this thing. I'm very endorsed in it. And if you go back through my tweets, this would be very laborious, but if you did, hypothetically, and you went back through the last 7 years, you would see me consistently pushing 1Password as a great password manager. Now, the other thing as well is that I have never been incentivized to promote that product. So they have never paid me to promote 1Password. I've never even gotten 1Password for free. Even last month, I went and bought the subscription model. And this was last month before even considering this sort of partnership thing. So I have always gone out and bought it because I think it's the best thing. In fact, I bought the family edition last month, which has the online subscription service we'll talk about in a moment, which my wife uses as well. And we, you know, we can share stuff and this sort of thing. So I was very endorsed in it. The other thing is, as I just mentioned, I've got a long history of recommending it myself. So if anyone looks at it and says, Why is Troy recommending 1Password? Is it because they're now paying for position on Have I Been Pwned? Well, no, because I've always done this. The payment is totally independent of the fact that I think it's a very good password manager. The other thing again, and this is what really got me thinking about this, the sort of partnership in general, was the work they did with Pwned Passwords. So last month when I launched Pwned Passwords, I pushed it out early on a Thursday morning from memory. I think it was like 5 a.m. my time. And they pinged me sometime during the day and said, oh, we're going to integrate Pwned Passwords with 1Password. And I was like, oh, yeah, cool. That'd be a nice idea. And then the next day it was there. You know, like they just got up and did it. They just made it work in sort of record time. They got enormously positive feedback from people about this. I mean, I literally saw hundreds of tweets from people saying, this is awesome, you guys rock, great to see these two services together with 1Password using Pwned Passwords. So they had really, really good positive consumer sentiment, and they just consistently demonstrated that these guys are on the same wavelength as me. And this is really, really important, I think, when you work with anyone in any sort of commercial capacity. You've got to have the same ideals and the same objectives and the same values. So they certainly had that. So, you know, all of these things together made them the natural choice. And when I actually distilled it down, it became a really easy decision. And I want to be clear that the decision for them wasn't even a commercial one. It's not like they were willing to pay more money than the other provider. That never factored into it at all. It was that these guys are going to be the best possible fit, and I would sleep the best knowing that they're the ones that have the presence on Have I Been Pwned. So what it now looks like is that 1Password sits on Have I Been Pwned on the homepage. There's under the search bar and everything, because the search bar is still the most important thing there. Under there is a little 1Password logo. What does it actually say? Something about go and get 1Password. Generate secure, unique passwords for every account. Learn more at 1Password.com. So that sits there. After you do a search, it comes back whether you have a positive hit, so it's actually found you in a data breach, or a negative hit, haven't been found in a data breach. It comes back with the same message, which is effectively there are three steps to better security. And this goes back to the three steps I mentioned before. Now, regardless of whether you like 1Password or another password manager, everyone agree on these steps. Get a password manager. Turn on multi-step verification, or 2FA, or 2SV, or whatever you want to call it. And number three, subscribe to notifications for Have I Been Pwned, so you get an email if you appear there later on. So those three steps now appear after the search. And again, keep the target demographic in mind. The vast, vast, vast majority of people who come to their site have never heard of a password manager before. They probably never even thought about 2FA before as well. So these are the people we want to target. I want them to see this and go, okay, someone has handed to me on a silver platter what I need to do now to protect myself. And my sincere hope is that the outcome of this is that we get a much higher uptick of people using Have I Been Pwned and then getting a password manager and making super secure passwords for their services. So that's what we've done. And so far, the feedback has been awesome. I was honestly really, really, I don't want to say really, really worried about this, but I was just really, really conscious. And I wasn't worried simply because so much thought went into what is the right partner? What should it look like after you search? How should it feel? So a huge amount of thought went into it. And I was just very conscious that there was going to be a portion, as I mentioned before, a portion of people that are unhappy. No matter what I do, there's always a portion of people that are unhappy. And I wanted to make sure that was as small as possible. And I got to say, it's much smaller than what I expected. Now, for context, and I do want to talk about some of the things that I've read about people that have come back with some sort of counter arguments as well. So just for context, if you want to see the good stuff people have been saying, I've just been liking tweets that have been awesome. And there are a lot of them. Go and have a look at my Twitter profile. You can see my public likes. There's just been absolutely awesome feedback, mostly along the lines of people saying, we love what 1Password stands for. We love what Have I Been Pwned stands for. Seeing them together is cool. The only theme that I can pick up that has not been positive, and this is not even necessarily negative stuff, I think it's more sort of neutral, is that a few people have said, and you can see there's comments on the blog post about this, that it should be clearer about the relationship between 1Password and Have I Been Pwned on the Have I Been Pwned page. And to be honest, I haven't even read all these in detail yet, but one of the things I noticed is someone said it should be a little bit like when you go to Google and one of the results is an ad, it should sort of say it's an ad. I'm not quite certain that's the right approach. And first of all, I want to sort of get more feedback from people and see if this is a sort of a continuing theme, or see if it's just like two or three people that feel this way. And at the moment, I think that's what it is. There's sort of three-ish, maybe four comments there. The reason I'm a bit hesitant about this is that I'm not sure that paradigm translates. So when you go to Google and you see a bunch of results, and some of them are prioritized unnaturally in order to get you to click through them and perform an action, because they're an ad and there's an incentivization, I feel that's different to you're on Have I Been Pwned, you do a search, it says here's a password manager. Now, again, I'm not sort of completely convinced I shouldn't do something, but I do think it's a different model to that sort of Google scenario. I'm also conscious, like, we want to have transparency, which is why I wrote the blog post. Someone said I was too transparent. Well, actually, they said I wrote too much in it, and it should have been shorter. And I'm like, but I'm trying to be as open and honest about everything as possible as well. There's always the blog post, which is super, super transparent on everything. So I feel that that's there. I'm just, yeah, I don't know if I should change it or not. If you have ideas based on what I've just said, I'd love to hear them. One of the ideas I do have is I would actually like to see when you click through to Have I Been Pwned, I'd actually like to see when you click through to 1Password, I would like to see a landing page on the 1Password site, which is more tailored to people coming in from Have I Been Pwned. And this is a discussion I've been having with 1Password as well. This is certainly something we may do in the future. I'd like to see that, firstly, because I think the context is a little bit different. So this is someone who has very likely just found themselves exposed in a data breach. And incidentally, I don't think that that's information that I would pass to 1Password. I think whether you had a hit or not a hit, you'd go to the same link, to the same URL. There wouldn't be any referrers or anything giving it away. They are massively, massively big on privacy as well. And in fact, they said, look, we don't want tracking codes or anything like that. We'll just look at referrers so we know how many people come from that domain. I think we could add more information to the page which you then land on, and that might also be the right place to have the transparency around the partnership. Now, let me also clarify that term, partnership, because I haven't said sponsorship, I haven't said advertisement or any of these sorts of things. So on my blog, it's clearly sponsorship. There is a line here, someone buys that space and they get it for a week, and that's what it is. The reason we went with partnership is that we do see this as a two-way street. And the most obvious representation of that is that 1Password is using Have I Been Pwned, right? We all know that. The pwned passwords are in there. Incidentally, just yesterday as well, I saw them blog that that integration, being able to check a password, is now in the beta version of 1Password for desktop for the Mac as well. So hopefully that will signal it will sort of flow through to the product suite and we'll get on PCs and things, and maybe mobile devices too. So they are using that data from Have I Been Pwned, and there may be more in the future as well. We'll have to see what else we can come up with. But this is not just a one-way street where they whack something on the site and that's it. And that was really important for me as well. And this was also, you know, I know I touched on this before, this is also one of the reasons why they made the most sense to partner with. Because as of now, I'm not sure if any other password managers have actually integrated anything from Have I Been Pwned. And incidentally, if they do want to, if another password manager comes along and says, we want to use pwned passwords, I will give them all the help in the world to do that. Because that is the best thing for everyone. So there's no exclusivity or anything like that around any of the services in Have I Been Pwned. Anyone can use them. I'd be very, very happy if they did. So that's sort of where we are with the 1Password piece. It's early days. I published this, what are we, only about 16 hours ago. So I am going to keep monitoring that feedback. And I also expect that over time, I'll be able to do a better job of integrating the 1Password bits with Have I Been Pwned. So for example, there is different messaging which is relevant to different parties. If you get an email because you have personally been pwned in a data breach, it may need to have a different message to if you are a domain manager, or let's use a different term, if you're using domain notifications. So, you know, if you're the SOC at a large organization and there's 1,000 people in your company that are just being pwned, maybe you need to see a different message in the email about how to effectively use password managers for an organization, which is different to how to use password managers as an individual. So I think that there are places there where we can better improve the messaging, again, to try and drive positive behavior. So look, that's the situation with 1Password. I really hope that that's clear and people understand the motives. Obviously, it is a commercial relationship as well. They do pay to have a presence there. That is really going to help me do the stuff that I do as well. I do want to spend more time with Have I Been Pwned, and particularly sort of trawling through some of the massive troves of data I've still got to process. Hopefully, no more data breaches like the one I mentioned earlier on. I think I need some recovery time after that one. But there is a lot of content out there, and we know that there's a big pipeline and more stuff that will appear as well. And I really want to be able to focus on that, get that data in there, and let people know as soon as possible that they've been pwned, and then what to do about it as well. So look, that's the situation there. Please, please do give me a feedback on this. It's when I see themes of feedback, either on a positive route or a negative route, that I try and adjust things. There's always going to be one or two people that have different ideas to everyone else. That's cool. When I see a theme, that's when I start to say, okay, well, maybe things need to change. All right, last thing, and I know there's been a massive one as well. This week, Gold Security is sponsoring my blog. It is a sponsorship. It says, sponsored by, at the top of troyhunt.com. And this is a sponsor that has been around for quite some time as well. So I really appreciate these guys continuing to support what I do with the blogging side of things. So go and check them out. Now, final things in terms of upcoming stuff. I mentioned Hawaii before. So in 2 days from now, I'm heading off to Hawaii for the LocoMocoSec conference. This is going to be a really cool event. Scott Helm is over there already. He'll be speaking. Other people there are folks like Jim Manico, Jeremiah Grossman. The CEO of 1Password is going to be there as well. So I actually get to catch up with him, which will be cool. Bunch of other people from the industry who are going to do some really, really cool, interesting stuff. So if you want to go to Hawaii, you still got time. It's next week. So I'll come to you from there next week and also the week after, because I'm going to have a holiday with my family as well. I really want to take some time out and see my kids, which would be nice. So that is that for this mega, mega update. I've almost gone on an hour. Just to give you a sense of the Australianism of this, I am actually going to go and drive to my brother's house because they have a faster connection than me so that I can upload this so that it will get up in time for me to publish publicly in about 8 hours from now. I know, sign of the times. That's life in Australia. Thanks for watching, guys. I will come to you next week from Hawaii.